It was nighttime, February 1943, and I was standing next to my mother, thinking about the war in Europe. I had a very good relationship with my mother, so there's no need for any psychoanalysis about why I was thinking of the war. The fact was, we had finished dinner, and she was washing the dishes, and I was drying them, as was our routine. My father, a traveling salesman, was on the road, and my younger brother Jerry had run off to play. We lived in Danville, Illinois, which was about as far away from the war as you could get. Danville was a small town in the heartland of America, and it felt very much like the heartland. It was quiet and neighborly, a place where there was a rich side of town and a poor side, but not a bad side. Streets were brick. The homes were built in the early 1900s. Everybody had a backyard. Most were small, but none had fences. People left their doors open and the lights on, even when they went out. Occasionally, someone down on the luck would knock on the back door. My mother would give him something to eat. Sometimes she'd give him an odd job to do, too. I had things on my mind that night. You could tell from the way I looked out the kitchen window as I did my part of the dishes. I stood 6 feet 1 inch and weighed 130 pounds, if that. I was a tall drink of water, as my grandmother said. "I'm going to be 18 in March," I said. "That means I'll be up for the draft. I really don't want to go, and I really don't want to be in the infantry. So I'm thinking I ought to join now and try to get in the Air Force." My mother let the dish she was washing slide back into the soapy water, dried her hands. She turned to me, serious look on her face. "I have something to tell you," she said.
"Yeah?"
"You're already 18," she said. My jaw dropped. I was shocked. "But how?" "You were born a little premature," she explained. "You didn't have any fingernails, and there were a few other complications."
"Complications?" I said.
"Don't worry, you're fine now," she said, smiling. "But we just put your birth date forward to what would have been full term." I wanted to know more than she was willing to reveal, so I turned to another source, my grandmother Van Dyke. My grandparents on both sides lived nearby, but Grandmother Van Dyke was the most straightforward of the bunch. I stopped by her house one day after school and asked what she remembered about the complications that resulted from my premature birth. She looked like she wanted to say bullshit. She asked who had sold me the bill of goods. "My mother," I replied.
"You weren't premature," she said.
"I wasn't." "You were conceived out of wedlock," she said. And then she went on to explain that my mother had gotten pregnant before she and my father married. Though it was never stated, I was probably the reason they got married. Eventually, my mother confirmed the story, adding that after finding out, she and my father went to Missouri, where I was born. Then, following a certain amount of time, they returned to Danville. It may not sound like such a big deal today, but back in 1925, it was the stuff of scandal. And 18 years later, as I uncovered the facts, it was still pretty shocking to discover that I was a love child. I'm still surprised the secret was kept from me for such a long time when others knew the truth. Danville was a town of 30,000 people, and it felt as if most of them were relatives. I had a giant extended family. My great-grandparents on both sides were still alive, and I had first, second, and third cousins nearby. I could walk out of my house in any direction and hit a relative before I got tired. They were good, industrious, upstanding, and attractive people in our family. There were no horse thieves or embezzlers. I was once given a family tree that showed the Van Dyke side was pretty unspectacular. My great-great-grandfather, John Van Dyke, went out west via the Donner Pass during the gold rush. After failing to find gold, he resettled in Greene County, Pennsylvania. The same family tree showed that my mother's side of the family, the McCords, could be traced back to Captain John Smith, who established the first English colony in Jamestown, Virginia, in 1607. Maybe it's true, but I never heard any talk about that when I was growing up. Nor have I fact-checked. The part beyond dispute begins when my father, Loren, or L.W. Van Dyke,
met my mother, Hazel McCord. She was a stenographer, and he was a minor league baseball player. Handsome, athletic, charming, life of the party. And his talent didn't end there. During the off-season, he played saxophone and clarinet in a jazz band. Although unable to read a note of music, he could play anything he heard. He was enjoying the life of a carefree bon vivant until my mother informed him that she was in a family way. All of a sudden, the good life, as he knew it, vanished. He accepted responsibility, though, marrying my mom and getting a job as a salesman for the Sunshine Cookie Company. He hated the work, but he always had a shine on his shoes and a smile on his face. Years later, when I saw Arthur Miller's play, Death of a Salesman, I was depressed for a month. It was my dad's story. He was saved by his sense of humor. Customers enjoyed his company when he dropped by. Known as Cookie, he was a good time wherever he went. Unfortunately for us, he was usually on the road all week and then spent weekends unwinding on the golf course or hunting with friends. At home, he'd have a drink at night and smoke unfiltered Fatima cigarettes while talking to my mother. He was more reserved around my brother and me, but we knew he loved us. We never questioned it. He was one of those men who didn't know how to say the words. A joke was easy. At a party, everyone left talking about what a great guy he was. But a heart-to-heart talk with us boys was not in his repertoire. Years later, after I was married, Jerry and my dad drove to Atlanta to visit us. I asked Jerry what he and Dad had talked about on the drive. He shrugged his shoulders. "You know, Dad," he said, "not much of anything." My mother was the opposite. She was funny, like my dad, but much more talkative. If she had a deficiency, it was a tendency toward absent-mindedness. She once cooked a ham, and we later found it in my father's shirt drawer. I'm not kidding. And when I was in my 30s, she confessed that when I was little, she and my father would go to the movies, leave me at home by myself in the crib. I'd be a mess when they returned. "I don't know how I could have done that," she said. "Me neither," I replied. "But we were young," she said, smiling. "We didn't mean any harm. We just didn't know any better." I was 5.5 years old when my brother Jerry was born. And it was not long before my parents moved him from a little bassinet in their room to a crib in my room and made it my job to go upstairs after dinner and gently shake the crib until he went to sleep. Within a year or two, I was given the job of babysitting. It wasn't a problem during the daytime when my mom ran errands and was gone a short time, but there were longer stretches at night when my parents went out and our old house filled with strange noises and eerie creaks. I turned into a wreck. Convinced that that place was haunted, I'd pull a crate into the middle of the house, sit on it with an axe in my lap, ever vigilant and ready to protect my baby brother and myself.